Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Shira Springer. Now, let's look back at the year in music.
Yeah.
I remember syrup sandwiches and crime allowances, finessing on them with some counterfeits, but now
in the corner of this land.
Are some of our favorite songs from 2017. Humble by hip-hop icon Kendrick Lamar, Better Bad Idea from country artist Sonny Sweeney, and of course Bach's Goldberg Variation by famed pianist Glenn Gould. Joining me to talk about some of the music in 2017, the best music in 2017, is Tim Riley. He's a music critic with NPR. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Shira.
So let's begin with Glenn Gould playing Bach's Goldberg Variations. The original versions by Gould were released in 1955, right?
That's right.
A box set of these original recordings, and audio of that those complete recording sessions was released in 2017. And they have some really cool outtakes.
Very interesting outtakes where you can hear how many takes it took for him to get to the final takes that were used ultimately on the record. And what's fascinating about all these outtakes is you get to hear him exploring the Bach on his own terms and trying to really find that ideal pace and the ideal tone and the ideal color for any given variation.
It really lets you kind of get inside the genius of Gould, right?
Yeah. So for pianists, this is really fascinating, right? It's not for everybody because you're really just hearing a pianist practice, right? And trying to find that ideal sound. But it really does kind of draw the curtain back on what his work process was and reveal him to be this extremely ardent and devoted and curious and creative mind, because he tries things out at different paces. It's very interesting.
Did that surprise you, the fact that he was this ardent, devoted, and curious mind? Was that a new wrinkle to his personality?
No, you could always tell he was really creative, but what you didn't have was the process, mm-hmm. right? And how much repetition it takes to get to polishing and making something really, really good. You have to have so much patience in order to drill down as far as you need to drill down to make it as good as it needs to be.
So what other classical releases stood out to you this past year? Any works by the Boston Symphony Orchestra?
So the BSO is in the middle of a gigantic Shostakovich cycle, which is 15 symphonies, and it is a really stunning and revelatory recordings they're releasing as part of that. But this year, in the spring, they released on their own label live recordings of Brahms' 4 symphonies, which, of course, is a cornerstone of the repertoire. And most major conductors and symphony their orchestras are going to be releasing this set at some point. But for him, for Andras Nelsons to do it at this point, right in the middle of Shostakovich, makes for a very striking counterbalance because it almost sounds like a different orchestra.
So let's hear a moment. This is Symphony No. 1 in C minor by Brahms, recorded by the Boston Symphony Orchestra. So that was recorded under conductor Andras Nelsons. He's the music director of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. What is unique about the way Nelsons conducts this piece?
Well, so with Brahms, you have just this beautifully engineered, I mean, it's kind of like the Cadillac of symphonic composers. These symphonies are so beautifully engineered, they kind of just run themselves. But what you listen for in any conductor is what kind of warmth, what kind of color, what kind of passion they're going to bring to the climaxes, how they're going to time everything. So you hear a lot of really beautifully sustained tension in these recordings, mm-hmm. where he's holding back and the ear really wants it to move forward, but then you get this great release when he does get to a climax.
So sort of taming.
Well, it's taming, but it's control. Mm-hmm. And it's very measured and creative control, where he's building much more tension into the rhythms than you might normally hear. He has a very, very a sure touch with Brahms, and it's a Brahms that equals any other Brahms that I've ever heard. It's really, really gorgeous.
So let's switch gears a little bit, because I hate to say this, but not all of the music news out of the BSO has been good this year. The BSO has said they will no longer work with famed conductors James Levine and Charles Dutoit after both men were accused of sexually assaulting multiple people. Levine had worked for the BSO for 6 years, and Dutoit, I believe, was a popular guest conductor with the symphony. Levine said in the statement that the charges against him are, quote unquote, unfounded. And Dutoit's office issued a statement that the accusations have, quote, absolutely no basis in truth. How do you think the BSO handled these accusations?
Among classical musicians, you could sort of just hear the eyes rolling all across our audience right now. I mean, these two figures especially have been especially known among classical musician fans and players as being real toxic figures in terms of the sexual harassment.
So how does it get through? I mean, is it just a question of male genius, you know, and in a kind of being given a wide berth?
You know, in the classical realm, with that male conductor being such a traditional authority figure, you have all the attendant pathologies related to those male authority figures, unfortunately. And, you know, it's a good thing that this is finally catching up with some of these people. And it's definitely we're not at the end of the list. I mean, there's definitely more to come. It was very unfortunate, the first statement that Andras Nelson's delivered regarding this, because he said
he didn't believe it existed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's no problem. I have to say, I went and looked it up, and he did release a statement later on. It was during a live interview, and the statement that he put out the day after was it did a lot of clarifying, and it was much more kind of on point. I think most of us hope that as a European addressing this American uptick in sexual harassment claims, that he really was just out of his depth and he was caught off guard and he did not speak as eloquently as he might have.
Yeah, and I think another facet of this problem could be the lack of diversity at these type of institutions, at symphonies, and sort of within classical music as a whole. So in October, as I understand it, as has been reported, a group of 60 local musicians called on the BSO to diversify its programming to include more works by women and musicians of color. I believe there was only, of all the works they'll play in the 2017-2018 season, I believe only one will be by a woman.
Yeah. And this is a real problem. And I looked up some background on that letter. And one of the most persuasive ends of that argument in that letter is that at Tanglewood, at the Music Center during the summer, they are constantly doing works by people of color, works by women. 30% of the compositions they're playing out at Tanglewood in the summer are devoted to diverse elements. So it's something they have in the repertoire. They have the stuff. They know how to do it. They just need to program it, and they need to make audiences accept it. But
yeah, I was going to say, you say they need to make audiences accept it. Does it matter to audiences? And that's one question. And then the other question is, should it matter to audiences? It certainly matters to the musicians. That's clear by the 60 that brought it to the attention of the BSO.
Well, I mean, yes, absolutely it should matter to audiences, but it should matter in all kinds of different levels, right? We have the same problem in journalism. Most journalism newsrooms, we're fighting to get more representation of women and people of color. And in the classical world, you're dealing with a very white male province, right?
And a canon that's obviously very white,
right?
Male, and an audience that is accustomed to hearing that canon.
You know, but any gestures that you make in opposition to that are only going to help enhance and reify all of the good stuff that's already there. It's like museums, you know. We need to say there were painters who were not white males who actually did great painting. We want to see them more in museums. Yes, we need to see this all across the whole spectrum of art.
So one place where women have found massive commercial success is in country music. And I know that, Tim, one of your favorites this year was Sunny Sweeney. She's an artist from Nashville who released her fourth album, Trophy, this year. So let's listen to a clip from one of Sweeney's songs. This is Better Bad Idea off of her album, Trophy. So tell me what happened in country in 2017, and for you, what makes Sonny Sweeney stand out?
Well, there have been just a real, it's been a real uptick year for women in country, and I'm thinking about people like Dorie Freeman and Caroline Jones and Margo Price and Heather Miles and Ashley McBride. And there's a record by someone I just discovered this past week named Angelina Presley, a record called Wrangled, which is going to make my list. Women in country are just really grabbing the brass ring and making a lot of really interesting statements. And the thing I like about Sonny Sweeney is that she's doing it within the context of being a kind of a big, established corporate female country diva. She still is able to reach out through all the production elements and make a real human connection with her listeners. And people disagree about her, but I think she's actually doing the genre a lot of good.
So also on the pop charts, though, women are seeing massive success. Yeah. And that's even without Beyonce this year, yeah. Really. So let's take a listen.
Now she say she gon' do what or who? Let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at, you know where I be. You in the club, just to party, I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and I've been bent so much, I know they tired of me, honestly.
So that's Cardi B. She became the first solo woman in 19 years to get a number one on the Billboard 100 with Bodak Yellow. And then let's not forget Taylor Swift's album, Reputation, is the best-selling album of the year. And Lorde received critical acclaim for her album, Melodrama, and breakout R&B star SZA saw massive commercial success. So there are a lot of, let's also think, there are a lot of other big artists we don't have time to talk about today. We have Jay-Z's return with the introspective 444 and Eminem's fiery new album Revival. I mean, pick one that sort of stood out to it was Cardi B or Jay-Z or whomever.
Yeah, in addition to that list, I'd like to add Mary Blige, who released a great album called Strength of a Woman and also made a star turn with a leading role in Mudbound, the movie, and she's gotten nominated for a Golden Globe. And this is, you know, a really tough pivot to make. A lot of people try to make this pivot, and she does so just gloriously. It's a great record. It'll make a lot of lists. The thing that I notice as I'm going over all these critics' lists at the end of the year is that there's so little consensus. Mm. A lot of people are choosing Lorde for Album of the Year. A lot of people are choosing St. Vincent. A lot of people are choosing Beck. A lot of people are choosing Kendrick Lamar. But among those people who are choosing those records, there's very little overlap, mm-hmm. right? So certain records getting on a lot of people's lists, but not more than like three or four on many people's lists.
So I'm going to have to disagree slightly because I think there is some consensus around Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was really the artist that got the most people talking in 2017. And, you know, here's more from the track Humble off his album Damn.
Holla, holla, sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down.
Sit down. Tim, we've got 30 seconds here. You're a fan of Kendrick Lamar. What is it about him that you like?
Well, each record is different. So his first record, Good Boy Mad City, is a really strong rap record. Pimp a Butterfly is a very strong concept album and protest record. And this record, Damn, is a pop record. I've talked to Kendrick Lamar fans who talk about how he's already done his protest move. He's done his great rap move. This is a record that really is going to make him more popular with more listeners.
That's Tim Riley, a music critic for NPR. Thanks for joining me, Tim. Love talking about the Goldberg Variations. That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Bruzek, with help from Cassandra Sunt, Zoe Mitchell, and Lily Tyson. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Shira Springer, and this is Radio Boston.
Sit down. That he frontin' on women. Get the off my stage. I'm the cement. Get the off my. Hey, that ain't right. I make a play blowing up your whole life. I'm so sick and tired of the Photoshop.